ESRM, does it have a place in the Protector's playbook?
Welcome to the Circuit Magazine, the number one source of information on protection matters, the industry-leading magazine for all security professionals who want to stay ahead of the game.
Are we moving from the Department of No to the Department of Everything over lockdown? And if so, is it time to give some of that back? Doing security is not just about protecting everything, it's about prioritizing. So today we're going to be talking with Rochelle Loyer, who is VP Innovation and Product Management at G4S, about her work in the ESRM, Enterprise Security Risk Management sector, her book, her publication, her work with ASIS, to essentially look at how this strategy can apply to many security fields, including close protection. I'm here with John Moss. This is a very interesting topic because it's a strategic one, which may at first, you know, glance not apply to the individual operator, but I think it has a lot of value.
Yeah, absolutely, Palam. And I think before we go any further, we should just back up a little bit and make sure that we're clear on what we're talking about. So first of all, what is ESRM?
Okay, so ESRM, you've probably heard it as a buzzword. It's an approach to managed security programs based on what you want to prioritize. So if you go on the ASIS website, they want you to ask three key questions. What do I need to protect? What do I need to protect it from? And how can I best and most efficiently protect it? It's all about prioritizing risks and assets to protect. And I think that might fly in the face of a lot of people's instincts that, you know, we need to protect everything, because if I don't cover all bases, then, you know, what if one of them is a successful threat vector? And I guess it depends. Are you a corporate security leader? Are you a piece of the machine? That's perhaps a very interesting dynamic, because obviously over lockdown, many things have become the responsibility of physical security. So isn't this a golden opportunity to reframe the debate as to what is a priority?
Yeah, definitely. You know, what I really like about this subject is that it's both a process and a protocol. So what I mean is, for us as protectors, in many cases, when we hear about enterprise security risk management, it sounds very corporate speak. And if we do hear about it inside of our organizations, we often associate it with maybe somebody sat in an office, maybe somebody a few years older, maybe somebody who's getting paid a little bit more as well than us. But I also think that we can look at this as a procedure and a protocol as well, the way that we approach everything, all of our assessments, you know, our assessment in the moment when we're out on the ground and we're going into a new venue for the first time. And like you just said, we can't cover all the bases, and we're always going to be limited by factors, whether that's budget, our own capacity, knowledge, so many different things. And so we have to quickly identify where the greatest risk is, what's the most important areas, make an assessment, and do the best we can with the resources we've got. Gold standard is always going to make us want to plug all the gaps. But if we can't, we need to plug the most important gaps. Would you say that's fair? Is that a good appreciation?
I think so. And in fact, what Rochelle is sort of working on is this admission that, you know, budget is always an issue for somebody, right? You ask, what's your biggest problem? The first thing they say, oh, I haven't got a budget. Actually, that's not their biggest concern. But their biggest concern is prioritization of, a security task. And in a way, imagine you're an individual operator. It gives you the permission to use the language of senior management back to them. If you say, in your ESRM strategy, I would be very grateful if you would not put this asset in my hands, but that asset. Or you're getting threat intel for protest intelligence. when in fact that's not what is of most concern. I'd rather you spend the money in another field. So for me, it's empowering even the new professional or the not so highly paid professional, right? To speak the management language back to them in a format that they're already receptive to hearing about. And that perhaps is one of the things that Rochelle is very good at. And you know, she's written books on this, and she leads in the ASAS working groups to try and empower corporate security to have a voice, but something meaningful. Everyone will have a gripe. Everyone will say, oh, please don't do this because, you know, I've heard it all before. You know, there's always that kind of gripe and skepticism out there, but there's not a common language framework to talk back. And I think that's where the value is. I mean, do you think there's an appetite for this?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, because one of the things that I wanted to get out of this on a personal level is beyond the kind of demystifying of it, I also want it to be more accessible to myself in the way that I think about it, the way I approach it. Because, you know, when we hear these corporate official terms, and it can seem like someone else's problem. And when we get into the mentality of thinking and believing that the full holistic security coverage of our protectee is someone else's problem or someone else's responsibility, that creates gaps immediately. And, you know, this highlights the importance of communication up and down the chain as well, but also being knowledgeable in these areas and understanding, even if it doesn't fall directly in our lane or it's not completely our responsibility, understanding what role we play in the implementation of that. So I'm really excited for this interview. I'm really looking forward to learn from it. And I hope, at least as protectors, that we're all a little bit wiser after we hear Rochelle speak.
Love it. And, you know, Rochelle, great friend of the industry, spoken at many conferences. It's great to have her on the podcast. So let's hear from Rochelle Loyer, VP Innovation at G4S.
And now let's meet one of the contributors to the Circuit magazine.
So today we are joined by Rochelle Loyer, author of ESRM Concepts and Application and VP Innovation at G4S. It's a pleasure to have you on. How are you doing?
I am doing very well. It's a pleasure to be here today. Thanks a lot.
It's great to have you on. I know you're very active in the community. You're very active at the ASAS community and you're a big passionate advocate for ESRM, Enterprise Security Risk Management. Today, I guess I wanted to explore not just what it is, but how it can apply to lots of different segments of security. So, for example, Circuit Magazine, you know, we have a lot of protectors. We have a lot of executive security. But we also have colleagues in the wider corporate security community. Some may be more familiar, some may be less. Perhaps if we start off with, well, what is ESRM actually trying to solve? It, as if there's a gripe out there that maybe ESRM is trying to, you know, find a solution for.
So I think when you think about ESRM, Enterprise Security Risk Management, the issue that it is really trying to solve for is this idea that security is solely the domain, responsibility, and I'll use quotes, fault of the security practitioner, that it is your job to know all, be all, decide all, and therefore it's just entirely up to you. ESRM allows us to really put the business decision-making power back with the business, guided by the security practitioner. And it's a bit of a sea change, because when you're asking a business to make decisions about how they want to allocate their funds, whether it's operational, finance, investment, whatever, they have a risk tolerance for things. They have Yes, we are willing to do that. No, we are not willing to do that. Some companies operate at a very high risk level, and they're completely willing to lay it all on the line in order to get what they want. Security is a risk averse group as a whole. And so this is allowing the security practitioner to have a real conversation about what the risk tolerance is with the risk owner, and then protect it accordingly. A lot of times you get, hey, your security program's too expensive. And I'm sitting here and saying, but I am securing it as well as I can. I must have this to secure all of these things that I have to secure. Whereas if you take a risk management approach to it and you're looking at what does the company consider important, maybe you're protecting things that they actually don't need protected. Maybe you are spending effort in places that they would prefer you not. And this goes right down. I mean, you mentioned executive protection. With some exception, your protectee is allowed to say, I do not want to be protected in this manner. And it's the same kind of thing. You can say, you're an idiot. I mean, you could say it politely. But if you take that and extrapolate it further, an entire company is allowed to say, we do not want to be protected in this way. And then you work with them to figure out the best way to protect it in the way that they're willing to protect. And that really, to me, is the base level of ESRM. It's taking a slightly different tactic. It's putting the responsibility on the people who are going to be the most impacted. I'm a security practitioner. I want to put things in place. I want everything heavily protected, but I don't have the right to tell the person who is actually impacted that they need to have that. If they're willing to say, oh, my factory can go offline for 3 days, I don't care. I don't mind paying $2 million in ransomware. Then why am I trying to put an entire program to prevent that if you are 100% willing to pay the price? So it's putting the decision with them.
Well, that's interesting, because I think maybe a lot of people have this impression, oh, ESRM is just it's a framework that overarches everything, and it's all things to all people. But I like this, because in fact it helps you be selective. It helps you be more of a business asset. Well, you sound pretty passionate about it. So I guess I should really ask, where does this passion for ESRM come from?
It kind of started when looking at the security industry, and I came into the industry, I don't know, yay on 15-ish years ago, out of technology. And I got you get this over and over. Oh, my budget's been cut. Oh, I can't protect. Oh, I must do this and I need to do that. If we hearken all the way back to 9/11, which was a bit of a sea change in risk and resilience and things like that. But people were using it. They say, "Oh, I can use this to get more money because I think this needs to be protected." But then 2 years later, when nothing bad happened again, you're back in the same boat. And it's wanting to help the industry be more business savvy, wanting to help security be more effective. If you are one person standing there saying, I am super smart and I know how to do this, you're not a business partner. People are constantly saying, we need a seat at the table. Well, that table, that management executive table, is a business table. It's about profit and loss. It's about what you're contributing to the top line and the bottom line. And bringing security up from being a cost center to being a valued business partner and provider of mission critical activities is how I came into this space, wanting to help people have the business conversation, wanting to help get them that seat. When they say my CEO doesn't understand me, it's not the CEO's problem. It's your problem to learn how to speak to the CEO. And that's what I was trying to get to, is helping people really engage at the risk owner level and speak the language of people who are totally willing to take risks in a lot of areas, instead of just saying, you can't take this risk. And that's where it all came from. And it's sort of grown from there. I just have a very significant passion to help security directors really engage as trusted advisors. And that's kind of where my entire career has gone from there.
I like it. Yeah, trusted advisors, the, you know, in the cyber world, the VAR, value-added reseller and things like that. There's lots of great comparisons. And well, I suppose taking a step back, because of course many listeners will think they know what ESRM is, but let's imagine that they were completely uninitiated in the topic. What would you like them to know? Obviously, you know, where's it come from? Who started it all? But what should they actually better understand?
So the term ESRM, I think, has been around about a decade. It started with some partnerships and some people at ASIS International. John Petruzzi, Brian Allen, Ray O'Hara, Dave Tyson. Dave Tyson wrote a book about convergence of physical and cyber security. I think that was maybe the first book talking about this concept of managing risk in a security risk as if it were any other type of risk. And it's evolved since then. Now we have a framework and a guideline and how to approach it and tactics for implementing it into a business. But at heart, if you just want to know what is ESRM, it is the simple activity of using traditional risk management against security risk, which is not, it's not that giant a concept. But it's different because we have so historically been so risk averse that we won't manage the risk, we only mitigate it. And managing risk is not about tactics. If you say, oh, I manage risk because I have put up fences and cameras and I have a canine program and all of these things, you are mitigating individual risk. But are you then going back and measuring those risks? Are you tracking your trends? Are you engaging the people who own the assets that you're protecting to see if you are mitigating the risk in line with their tolerance? If you're managing a risk that nobody cares about, you're wasting company money. And to me, that is the very foundation of ESRM, is taking that traditional risk management approach and applying it to an area that for the previous yay on 100 years, people just thought of as a mitigation activity that you had to do. They would say, oh, what's so-and-so down the street doing? They have a fence and they have an officer. I better get one too, regardless of what your program actually needed. So there's a lot of tools and tactics and everything that go around it, and guidelines. And I'm sure you could take, I've taught classes on it. You can take classes on it. But at heart, that's really it. It's not conceptually difficult. Changing your mindset from I must mitigate everything to I will allow the business to make a decision, I think, is the hardest piece of adopting ESRM. It's the philosophy behind it.
No, I like that. And in a way, I see a great synergy between that and the way that a lot of executive protection colleagues will have to operate. Last year or the year before, it was there was an uptick in demand from crypto billionaires who had a very lax and relaxed lifestyle, who found themselves now with lots of money. And what they required was very, very different to some established high net worth families. And if you try to put all of the mitigation, you know, of an established high net worth, then they wouldn't like it. So I see this directly applicable to their day-to-day life. I'd be interested in your thoughts about the blending of security and resilience with this technique, because traditionally, and we had Martin Green, who's a healthcare security professional, on last week, and we were talking about the way in which we need to admit at certain stage security fails, and a resilience and a backup disaster recovery, it needs to, you know, come into play. I'd be interested in your thoughts on how ESRM might wrap those two together, or does it not wrap them together?
It actually does. To me, resilience and security, you cannot have resilience without security, because first you have to protect the thing, because that's prevent. It comes before contain and recover in the resilience world. But ESRM allows you the capacity to go from, yes, we are going to do these activities to mitigate or prevent the risk. We are going to do these activities to contain the damage. And then we must consider these activities to recover from it. And it is a to Z comprehensive, because what you mentioned earlier, an umbrella, all things to all people, it's a philosophy that can inform both of those. And I've always been of the opinion that resilience and security are one thing. So I know that I am in a slightly different island in that. A lot of people are like, no, it's different. But I have always thought that resilience and security are one. But security, ESRM, is again all about maintaining the mission, protecting within the realm of what they need to have protected, what they want to make sure can and continue. And so if I'm looking at it and saying, okay, my executive has said that this item is mission critical, I must protect it. Well, now I also know that this item is mission critical. So how do I make sure it's resilient after I protect it? It's a flow that goes from one to the other. So I think it does tie it together completely. I honestly don't know how you'd separate them anyway. So I guess that's just my viewpoint, is that you cannot separate the two. And ESRM, at least it gives you a good argument for why you can't separate the two.
There you go. I like that. And so that, you know, that there would be no shame for a close protection professional saying, if security is breached, then I have these medical skills, for example. So there's no shame in that.
100%. There is no perfect security. If you take a risk-based approach to your entire program, the thing that you're educating your protectee on is, here are the dangers that you are personally exposed to, whether it's a factory or a human. Here are the sets of threats that are arrayed against you. Here are the activities that I can do to offset those threats, reduce your vulnerability. However, there is no such thing as zero vulnerability. And that, to me, is another key aspect of ESRM. You are never going to them and saying, I am on the line, I am on the hook, I will do everything to protect you. Mm. Now, executive protection, you have to do as much as possible, because it's a human. If we make that a broader discussion, you cannot, it's a recipe for being fired in corporate security, saying, I got this, I'm handling it, everything is going to be perfectly secure, nothing bad is going to happen to you. Because the second something bad happens, boom, you're fired. And something bad has happened, and the company is in trouble, and everything's on fire, awful. If you walk through this step of saying you have threats, here are vulnerabilities, we can reduce your vulnerability surface, not to zero. In the event that something slips through your vulnerability, here's what we do to react and contain the damage. And there's absolutely no shame, as long as the person on the receiving end understands. If you have sold them a bill of goods saying that they have 100% protection, then why are you talking about your medical skills? Nothing bad is ever going to happen. Don't talk to me about after.
Yeah.
So I think that's, when you look at it in that risk-based approach, they have to understand that 100% protection is not a thing.
Well, I get how they must, but they should understand it. And of course, there's going to be megalomaniacs out there that basically say, ah, I can't believe you've let me down in so many ways, you know, and there's that type of person. But equally, I find that it might be difficult, because if I come into a shop, a hardware shop, and I say, I would like a hammer, please, and someone sells this hammer to me, and I say, oh, this hammer does not grow plants. And you're like, well, no, it has a specific task. It's very clearly defined. And I know I've used a really random example there. Just, you know, came
to... Oh, it's an excellent example, though.
Well, you know, but the problem there is that there is a documentation of offering and a documentation of expectation and a receipt of purchase and so on, which would fit into this, you know, ability to protect and opt out from a certain aspect of protection. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, in the quote unquote real world, where things are not always as documented, how can one document one's actions and protect oneself? Because if you say, ah, well, this was not in the bill of rubber, you know, how do you actually put that down on paper?
So at the risk of you put it down on paper. but a little bit of backup. One of the advantages that I get in my job, being in innovation, is that I get to talk to a lot of people about their needs. And I am not in the business in my organization of, you walk in the door, you say, I need a hammer, and I sell you a hammer. If in my org, in what I do, you walk in the door and say, I need a hammer, and the first question that I ask you is, what do you need the hammer to do? Why do you need a hammer? Why are you asking me for a hammer? And when they say, oh, because I want to grow tomatoes, then we explore the options that can help you grow the plant. Because you came to me because I have a certain, somebody told you you needed a hammer. I am an expert and I'm supposed to be your trusted advisor. I could sell you a really expensive hammer and it wouldn't help you. In my world, I don't want to do that. So we have a conversation about what you need. We document what you're concerned about, what your goals are. We talk about the different options that you have. We put in place what the expectations are. And then now you have a document that says, this is the program. And the people who are the risk owners, the asset owners, are going to sign that. And in ESRM, this is getting a little bit into the details of it. You have to find out who all your asset owners are. You have to make sure that they understand that they are the ones who are impacted when things do go wrong. I am not. Like, the thing that is going to happen to the security person, as previously discussed, things go wrong, you get fired. The asset owner is not going to be able to do their job. They're not going to be able to function in their factory. Their network is going to be down. All of the impact is on the asset owner. So when they say, I'm not worried about that, I don't want you to protect me, if it's just Joe, the manager of the building, who says, I don't want you bothering me today, okay, ESRM requires the security practitioner to escalate it to a person of decision-making capacity. But if that person has the ability and the capacity and is in the right mind to say, do not protect this, you say, thank you, would you please sign this piece of paper or send me an email or in some way put it in some provable form that you do not want me to protect that, and I will go on about my business. And we have found that when you ask them to state for the record that they don't want things protected, suddenly their risk tolerance goes dramatically down. And then it starts a different conversation of, oh, I am really on the hook for this. And they did it, you know, let's go back all the way to Sarbanes-Oxley. As soon as CEOs had to sign off on their financial statements and could go to jail, that's what I call orange jumpsuit risks. Suddenly there was a huge effort to become compliant because they could go to jail. Somebody put their name on the line. And that, it sounds a little bit mercenary, but it's not. It's a way to make them realize that they are the ones impacted, not you. So and that to me is the statement there.
And I think I'll use that orange jumpsuit risk. I think that's quite an image. But on the flip side, are there security professionals really that are trying to scare the end customer? I mean, obviously there's vendors out there that have solutions in search of a problem. That's always going to be the case. Yep. You know, I've got my new pen. It's amazing. But are there security practitioners saying, well, you've secured your network, but are you preventing the sysadmin's children from getting kidnapped on the way home from school? I mean, like, it's not going to happen, or at least it shouldn't happen, right? But even there, me even saying that makes me think, oh, maybe we should protect these people, you know. But are people deliberately scaring people out there?
So this is something that it's a dislike of mine in the security industry, FUD, fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which is, if you go to sales school, it is a tactic. It is a 100% confirmed and viable functional sales tactic. You make the person that you're trying to buy something from afraid, and we'll pick on used car salesmen. You make them afraid. Oh, this car is really popular. You're going to lose the deal. You have to make them afraid that they're going to miss out on something. You instill uncertainty in them, and then you become a trusted person. You make them feel doubt about a thing that they never had doubt about before. And this is, oh, that car at the lot down there, they charge too much, or you'll pay too much if you go anywhere else, or I've got this deal for you right now. That is a sales tactic I don't like. I don't participate in it myself, but it works. Humans are who we are. We respond very well to it. If you use that in your security program, as opposed to a reasoned risk conversation, you will probably get your very big budget up front. You will scare people about whatever the risk of the day is. I'm sure lots of people made a lot of money in the pandemic. A lot of people, again, we throw it, anytime a big tragedy happens, you can scare people into protecting against that. But if it's not a real risk for them, they're gonna find that out in a period of time. And then you've burned yourself. And if you are trying to run a program as opposed to make a quick buck, you are no longer trusted and you no longer have that seat at the table that we talked about. And you're never going to be listened to again. Boy who cried wolf, or any metaphor that you would like to have. Boy who cried wolf, maybe that's a little less malicious than just trying to make a quick buck. But yeah, it's, I dislike that tremendously, and ESRM fixes that. You don't have to use fear if you use a reasoned risk conversation of, this is your actual vulnerability to this threat. I have some data here for you. I can tell you what has happened in this area. I can give you a reasonable, again, no 100% in security, but I can give you a reasonable idea. And that to me is how ESRM fixes that problem our industry has. And to be fair, I don't see it nearly as much now as you did 20 years ago. It's not as common a tactic, but it still sits there because it works.
Yeah, it does work. And if you can whip people up into a frenzy about something, then people can shift a lot of things. Even 10, 15 years ago, very, very remote rural communities in the United States, which had no feasible way of having a terrorist attack, suddenly conjured up images. And I think people have calmed down a little bit, been a bit more practical. But of course, that's not just the States, there's other countries that are also available. You know, but I like this. So ESRM, and, you know, I know you've written Concepts and Applications as a book. If somebody was to read your book and to go on training courses, what could they hope to sort of get out of it? Would they get a stamp of approval? They put on their CV, I'm ESRM, you know, secure. What could they hope to learn?
So what you learn in ESRM, Notwithstanding the fact that I actually believe ASIS is going to be building some courses around it, and you will one day be able to get that stamp. But the stamp is not, in my opinion, the thing that you're looking for. If you want to learn about ESRM, it's the adoption of a philosophy and a way of doing business and a way of looking at things and a way of interacting with the people who own the assets that you're trying to protect. And if you look at it as adopting a philosophy, how you mitigate the risk, that's still your practitioner expertise. Nobody is trying to replace your knowledge of how to put together a quality mitigation program with this. The change is in how you present it, how you feel about your own success. So from my perspective, I no longer measure my success of my security program or tactical applications in how much, how many bodies, how many cameras, any of that. The success is my asset owner happy with the level of protection that is being granted? Have they set a tolerance, and is my program operating within that tolerance? And if so, then I feel good about the job that I've done. Now, I may personally feel like their tolerance is too low. They should be protecting it more. Sometimes I might feel so strongly about their tolerance that I just leave that organization and say, I can't be a part of that level of risk acceptance. But it is I get job satisfaction out of knowing that I have met the business need, just as any other, somebody in operations has met their quota, somebody in sales has sold enough things. I have met my need in protecting within the tolerance. So I think, to me, what you learn, in addition to how to identify risks and how to put together some metrics that can show you how to communicate your message and all of that sort of thing, it's really much more about adopting a relationship with your business that allows you to be more successful, to get more access to, and then mitigate in whatever way is appropriate. It's not about learning tactical skills. Security professionals have the tactical skills. It's proving the value of those tactical skills in a business sense that you really get out of adopting ESRM as the foundation of your security function.
Love it. Love it. And I can see direct applicability. It's not just protect us, you know, listen to the Circuit podcast, but, you know, I often like to draw those parallels. So I can see it. What's next for you? Are you writing any more? Have you got any new projects on the horizon?
So I do. I have a new project that I'm working on with a gentleman in the UK, name of Noah Price, very, very smart man. We are putting together a new book about how to tie your tactical mitigation activities to specific risks. Not sure when it's going to be out yet, but that's the biggest question that I get around risk-based approach, ESRM, when we start talking about risk is, from the practitioner point of view, great, you say I have a risk of intrusion, you say I have a risk of theft of property, insider threat, blah, blah, blah. How do I align my tactical mitigation to that risk in a way that I can then have the conversation to show the value of my spend to that risk that they're concerned about? So that's what we're working on right now, is that second step of directly tying. Security return on investment is a mythical unicorn that we're never really going to get, because you're trying to prove that you've avoided something. But we're working on ways to directly tie mitigation costs to the risk tolerance and the risk profile. So that's kind of my next windmill to tilt at, if you will, trying to figure out how to better communicate the value of security, not just in conversation, but in metrics and measurable ways.
I love it. And I'll look out for your new publication with Noah. That'll be really one to watch. And of course, as security throughout the pandemic became the Department of Everything, because no one else no one else was there. Well, other people were there, but you know, everything got lumbered on. I think that quantification is going to be ever more important, because otherwise security will just find themselves forever doing FM. And then maybe everything else. So maybe the whole company will be security. Who knows?
Well, you never know. If they throw enough responsibility at you, eventually you have to do everything. But I hope that we can stay in our swim lane whilst being impactful and helping the business accomplish its mission. So
wonderful. Well, accomplishing its mission, accomplishing your mission. It's been a pleasure talking to you. ESRM, hot topic, evolving topic, and I think we've seen a little bit beyond the buzzword, a little bit beyond the acronym that everyone seems to band about, which I think can only be of great benefit for everybody. Rochelle, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Have a great day, and we look forward to welcoming you again soon.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute joy.
Thank you very much to Rochelle Loyer, VP Innovation at G4S. What an interesting look at ESRM. And what on the, you know, in the first place, you might look at it and say, that's way too corporate. Yet, I feel we've got a lot of takeaways that are applicable to the protector. What did you take away from it, John?
Well, yeah, so wearing my protector hat, I guess the question it brings up is, am I approaching the provision of security in an integrated way? Or am I being a bit more rigid and thinking, well, okay, so if that doesn't fall in my lane, is that really my responsibility? But what this interview has done is opened my eyes and made me realize that, okay, so if something doesn't fall in my lane, but it is an issue to the vulnerability of the full security coverage to my client or principal, then that is going to be my issue at some point down the line. If it's not now, it will be later. And so you need to buy into this. You need to understand this, but also understand how you can apply this as a principle to the way that you work.
And that's maybe the key, isn't it? It gives you as the protector the language, the framework, and the permission to raise your voice. You might have a concern and you might say, well, it's not for me. I need to just be quiet and get on with my job. Yet, if it's a visible ESRM framework, then that language is expected. It's expected for you to say, yes, I'd love this new mobile phone app, but no, I really would not like you to make me get a TSEM sweep of the principal's car every day, which is sucking out the entire budget. And that helps you. You're the eyes and ears on the ground. So I like that. And as we said at the very beginning of all of this, you know, corporate security, physical security has become the Department of Everything. This is a way of pushing back and covering your behind, maybe with an email chain. However, John, that kind of must depend. That sounds excellent in a corporate security environment, but in a private environment, could you cover yourself by an email chain? Is that going to cut the mustard?
Listen, no. Yes and no. You can't rely on it, that's for sure. You've still got to do it, though, because it might be the best you have. And when it comes to the defense of the security that you implemented, the level of coverage that you implemented, it might be that the best you've got to show your reckoning and your reasoning why. But will it stand up to scrutiny? Well, that's going to be on a case-by-case basis. But listen, you're always going to be better for having that. And it's not just you and your department of physical security. So the whole ESRM thing covers the whole gamut. So that might include access control, that might include IT, cybersecurity, and so on. So if those departments are implementing these protocols and following them, and they're ring-fenced, and they cut off the potential attack or vulnerability, then that attacker still needs to find another way to get in if he's persistent. And so if they're all covering their asses, but you're not, then it's your department, your area of the security coverage that then becomes vulnerable. So at some point, again, you know, going back to the same thing, at some point down the line, this is going to become your problem. So yeah, you know, following those procedures and protocols in a fully integrated environment where ESRM exists, then yeah, you need to do your part.
Love it. And your part is part of a holistic whole. You are important, and your voice wants to be heard. It's not just a buzzword. I love it.
Well, listen, you know, this is not something that we should be fearful of. And I think that's the great thing with today's podcast, the guest and the interview and what came out of it. And it's to say that, look, with just a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of learning in this area, that there's nothing to fear. And you can come out of this as a better protector. You can do your job better and provide a better level of protection. And, you know, and I think that's fantastic.
It is, isn't it? And we're gonna follow up on some of these themes, obviously in a very specialized format. This afternoon, you know, when this podcast comes out, this afternoon we've got our protected mobility forum. So let's see how much ESRM we can flesh out there. Very much looking forward to it. Loads of great people and of course our fantastic speakers. In terms of other things that have been going on, I wanted to do a bit of a shout out. Last week, Elijah told us all that he's launched the Protectorgram within the Protector app. You know, it's the ability to post pictures. To be honest, we also have people loading fantastic pictures onto the BBA Connect app. But it's been really nice because it's a permissive environment. It's brought the platforms to life. I can see, even in the last few hours, some great pictures of people's work, obviously without compromising principle. But I think that is very much to be encouraged. It's great to see such engagement on the app. I don't know if anything's stood out for you this week.
Yeah, it's I love following Elijah and what he's up to. It's always good to cast an eye on the NABA side of things and to look at, think, well, how will that work across here, you know, on this side of the pond? And, you know, I think it really helps solidify the community side of our industry. And it definitely helps with networking, but I'm really enjoying it at the moment. And as long as that's not abused and it's entered into in the right spirit, then I think it's a fantastic asset.
It is, isn't it? And I think even though we haven't implemented a Protectorgram function on the BBA Connect app, people are doing it by default. They are showing pictures of maybe concert passes or perhaps certifications that they've had, which is nice, because then we can all get behind them and cheer. Obviously, today there's been a certain politician slapped in the face, which has been publicized, and lessons will be learnt. But again, that immediacy, that's really, really key. On the wider, you know, format on Instagram, it's great to see people like Chuck Randolph showing his travels. Mainly, I like that because, of course, I don't get to travel anymore. So it's nice to see people out and about.
Yeah, we're all living in or through someone else's shoes at the moment, especially if you're a captive on the Isle of Britannia.
Yes, a little bit tricky at the moment. But what else have we got coming out? The magazine is nearly there. What should people look out for with this latest issue?
Yeah, the magazine will be rolling out this week. We're into final production of that. It's a fantastic issue. I think one of the things that is slowing us down a little bit is what to trim, because we have to...
apply ESRM.
Exactly right. We're having to triage our content, but don't worry, if any of our contributors are listening, if you're not in this issue, you'll certainly be in the next one. But you know, we try to keep a really broad appeal. We try to hit a wide range of subjects along with our regular columns, and this issue is going to be fantastic. We've got cybersecurity in there as usual with James Ball. We've got some OSINT. We've got a great feature on robbing banks actually, Pelham. So yeah, like I say, very diverse, very wide ranging.
It's a great issue. And with more things coming into the purview of the Protector, it's only going to make a more interesting series of articles, I think. Well, I'm very much looking forward to the Protector Mobility Forum this afternoon. Obviously, we'll have lots of great content to share from that. And Elijah has his course in July, which I think many people have already seen doing the rounds. But yes, ESRM, knowing what to push back on, giving yourself cover, not just a buzzword. These are some of the themes and thoughts I've had. And it's been a pleasure to have Rochelle Loyer's support. And I look forward to her new book and new collaboration coming up very soon. This has been another great edition of the Circuit Magazine podcast for you and with you as a community. We will look forward to seeing you again on another excellent edition.
You have been listening to the Circuit Magazine podcast. Be sure to subscribe and be sure to not miss an episode.